Welcome to episode 65 of the Vancouver Tech Podcast. I'm Drew Ogrizek.
And I'm Alex Moxon. So Drew, how was your week?
Well, it was pretty interesting. We had a lot of communication. When you start to add a lot of people to your team and you don't change the size of your office and you add a lot of communication and pair programming, guess what happens? Noise in the office space. There's a lot of times when somebody's concentrated on something, a lot of times programmers say they don't want to be interrupted. And you might be concentrating on something and you break your concentration and it can take a while to get back into it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think of this in two ways. So on the one hand, you might have all of these almost like mathematical formula, or you've got these variables you're holding in your mind and you're going working through a complex problem. And then when you get interrupted, that all kind of shatters or falls down like a house of cards. Mm-hmm. And then to build that house of cards back up takes a long time. And then on the other hand, I think if that's the way you're programming, then maybe you need to break it down into simpler steps so that you're not holding a house of cards all the time in your mind and you're able to sort of work in smaller incremental chunks on things that you know that you're working on and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Without having to have that sort of mental house of cards. Saying that's a lot easier than doing it per se. So in order to be able to be interrupted at any given time, you have to have a good understanding of what the system does, what you're trying to make it do. And something I find that helps a lot with that is conversation and pair programming and also testing.
Typically when your team expands and you've got, I think the intentions are good. It's usually for informing people, but often what ends up happening is a lot of red tape. To me, working as a project manager for many years, I think the only meeting you really need that's got to be a formalized meeting is your kickoff. You've got to be able to set the tone, the vision. Everybody needs to feel like they're part of the team. Everybody understands the complexity and the components of the project. And I think if you set that out at the start in a formalized setting, even if you take 2 to 3 hours for a kickoff, I think it's really important. If you can have the client there for part of it, even better. But otherwise, the last thing that you want to do in terms of productivity is throw 6 hours of meetings in a day. Those are some of the more frustrating environments that I've been in. And usually it's because you've got to get a bunch of groups together, differing stakeholder groups, and you all have to agree on what it is that you're doing. But if you do that at the beginning and you continually check in, go around, walk around the office, do it more informally, it's a lot better and you get a lot more done.
We have had more meetings. Rather, we've had design sessions. We've pulled people in where we had the back-end team together and we were discussing things, and we pulled in a product manager. Mm-hmm. And said, you need to be involved on this. You need to know what's going on. Here's where we're getting stuck. We've noticed things in our process that are not very good, or at least areas where we could definitely improve. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've been doing, and I don't like it at all, you know that game that people sometimes play where they whisper into an ear and then that person whispers into another person's ear and mm-hmm. another person's ear. And by the time it gets to however many people you've gone through, the message is different.
Yep.
And I think that that's often what happens. So our CEO, for example, might be talking to a customer or somebody who would be using one of our products and find there's some features that everybody could use and these are really cool. Then he might talk with our perhaps directly to a designer who would build some mock-ups based on that. And based on what the designer heard and understood from the CEO, mm-hmm. and there may be some disconnect there, and then we have these mock-ups, that gets passed to a product manager and then filtered in through to the dev team. So by the time it gets to the dev team, there are these set in stone requirements, which were actually things that people think or thought they heard that might not actually be requirements at all. And also, I think a lot of people are still in that mode of developing really quickly and having some legacy code mm-hmm. and kind of justifying why it was the way it was. Whereas I think going forward, now that we're bigger, we have some better processes in place, and I think some better developers as well, mm-hmm. We're able to make things better going forward.
I think that's really awesome. I think moving forward is such a key thing to do. I'm reading a book currently by Tim Ferriss, Tools of Titans. Awesome book. It's a really nice sampling of all the wisdom he's gained over the last few years. And there's a chapter where he interviews, and it's just snippets of wisdom, Marc Andreessen. And he asks him a question about, you know, when you look at things retrospectively, you try to learn from your mistakes, what sorts of tools and techniques do you use? And he says, well, I just don't. I never look back. And it almost sounds counterintuitive. Like, why would you not look at how you can improve things? What he does instead is he looks forward, and he just always keeps his eye forward, always moving forward, always looking to improve, without having to dig into the past. At some point, those lessons in his mind will, just sort of fall by the wayside. I mean, there's two different schools of thought. There's a lot of, I think retrospectives on projects can be valuable. And I think if you're continually repeating the same mistakes, then it's important to look back and see, you know, what are some of the commonalities? Why do you continue to do the same thing? But I also think it's so important to always look forward.
Have you ever been in school and a teacher says, let me finish this before you ask questions. Just trust me on this, or just assume
yep.
that you understand this part until we get to the end and then ask questions. And then by the time you get to the end, the amount of questions is much, much less than what it would have been had you stopped at every point along the way. Sometimes looking back can prevent you from looking at the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that's sort of analogous to, I would say, would be refactoring code. Because when you start to look at something that might be a little bit of a mess, but it works, and then you start to refactor it, and you have worse performance and less readability
mm-hmm.
in the interim, but you get to the point where it performs better and it's much more readable, and that's kind of a process. You kind of got to trust that it'll get there. It kind of reminds me of that.
I think that's really important. It also speaks to division of a product. I think that's so important to set up front.
What do you mean by division of a product?
Not division, by vision. So understanding what it is that you're doing and why you're doing that. That's if you can't answer why, just stop building your product, because there's no real reason to be building it. You've got to always be answering a question. It's like going out and building an amazing app without talking to users or without addressing a pain point. If you're not addressing a pain point, solving a problem, then maybe it's a cool idea, but you're not going to have that impact.
That's another thing that got brought up this week. What's the business value of this?
Yep.
And if you can't answer that, then why is there a ticket there? With more pairing, with more communication, and more cross-team communication as well.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of, well, build it out, you know, build out a backend, and then we'll figure out how to use it, how to consume the API that you develop,
mm-hmm.
have a conversation up front about what that might look like, and kind of have both parties involved, and maybe multiple parties, mm-hmm. even outside of development, perhaps, maybe not so much for the API design, but maybe.
Event storming is actually really good for that, because it gets a group of stakeholders in the same room, and you get the differing viewpoints up front. So that's one of the reasons why we always center all of our projects around an event storming session, as long as we have the opportunity to do that from the start.
As long as you have the opportunity to do that from the start. And that's often how I hear it being presented, is from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be from the start.
That's
and this
true.
Is something that we're noticing that I really like about the current situation that I'm in now,
mm-hmm.
is we have some legacy code with some bugs, with some rabbit holes we don't know about,
yep.
and we get to take that and refactor it into something good, great even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's already pretty good. Functionally, it works pretty well, I mean, but there are areas that are not the greatest. Anyway, the other thing that I really noticed was a lot of times these quote-unquote meetings,
mm-hmm.
spending time discussing things, how they should be, getting over blockers before you encounter them, means that you're saving time in the long run. Like if we spend a day or a half day or 6 hours in meetings, perhaps, mm-hmm. but we have the right types of meetings, and then you're only spending, say, 2 hours writing code, as opposed to, say, you spend 16 hours writing code and it's the wrong thing and it was the wrong requirements,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't turn out to be anything that you wanted. You could be wasting a lot of time. How about you? What did you learn this week?
What did I learn this week? I was focused mostly on business development all week and managing our client accounts. So we had a meeting with one of our startups on Wednesday, their Go Syllabi. They're actually going to be on the podcast coming up mid-March.
Very
so
cool.
They're developing this really cool online syllabus that they're marketing to different universities, and they'll be here to talk about more about it. We also had another meeting with another client of ours who's working also in the education area. And they have this really cool way of almost gamifying. It's this thing called Planet Protector. So the company itself is Dreamrider, and they're amazing. They do some really cool stuff. So we're really happy to be working with both of them.
So when you say business development, what does that mean?
I think it's enabling people to solve problems strategically. So forming strategic partnerships, talking to different teams. The ultimate goal of anyone that is really good at business development is looking long view and what can you achieve together systematically that you wouldn't be able to achieve alone? And how do you partner your teams? What areas of expertise do you focus on? Various things like that. Is there a specific expert of technology in a field that could be brought onto your team for a particular project? How does that look like? How do those partnerships form? Those are all really important questions, I think, to ask.
That makes me think of times when it might make more sense to develop something yourself versus use something that somebody else has developed or partner with other people. And at times it might make sense to contract something out because you get domain expertise and you get expertise in that, in the development of that, versus we also have an interesting choice or set of choices to make. We're looking for someone, kind of a DevOps person. The idea is that a lot of us, I think, are developers, and we have some familiarity with cloud, with deployments, and a lot of the tooling there. And so we're able to do a lot of this, but we don't have somebody that's maybe dedicated to do that or that's much better than us that can give us some advice to say, you know, yes, you can do this this way, but you could do it this way and this would be a lot better. So we've started looking for someone to maybe hire on full time. And something that I'm seeing that I'm a little cautious about, I guess, is a lot of people coming with great systems background, but not necessarily cloud focused tools experience with that. And I'm kind of wondering, would that be somebody who would pick that up really quickly or somebody who would fall back to what they know? And so in the interim, this also gives the other question is it better than to contract somebody out, maybe on a part-time basis, to look at and poke holes in our system and offer some mentorship with better practices for, I guess, basically cloud deployments and development.
Did you go to any meetups last week?
I went to the Public Cloud Users Group meetup on Monday, I think it was. And that was really good. It was interesting because there were a lot of people, it seemed, coming from a systems background that were learning cloud development stuff and cloud development tools. So one of the talks was exactly about that, about all of the different resources that are available. I can put some links down below, but about AWS having a lot of free courses, for example, and then some paid courses for certification. Was it Thursday or was it Wednesday? Thursday. I had a really difficult time deciding whether to go to the Ruby meetup or to the, there was a joint meetup, DDD, Secure SES Practitioners, and
Vancouver Digital Project Managers. So that's Vancouver the one we Digital spoke
Project
at.
Managers. Yeah. That, I went out to that. I thought it started at 6:30. It started at 6, but I got there at 6:30 and that was still okay. There's a little bit of some social time before that. And then on Friday, I went to the Tribe. It's a co-working space and they had a happy hour. How about you?
So I was at the only meetup I was at last week was the DDD CQRS ES meetup that was co-presented with Vancouver Digital Project Managers. And both of those groups I've been going to for a long time. So Vancouver Digital Project Managers is originally founded by Mark Fromson, who's a good friend of mine. And Rachel and Travis Gertz are also involved as co-presenters. Coordinators. Anyways, really great group. What I really like about this group is that it's a group of solution-focused people that are big on community, big on communication, big on solving problems. So it's really nice to be able to partner with them and talk about our event storming approach and CQRS and DDD and how that applies to project management. So to start with, Adam gave his talk about what is event storming, what is CQRS, and how does that apply. And then Robert led this really awesome discussion on how that applies specifically to projects and some of the communication blockers that are removed by using this methodology. And then we had an exercise that Robert Zalotic and I facilitated where we had a human centipede of events. It was really awesome.
So what are you up to this coming week? Any meetups that you're really looking forward to?
I noticed that there's a ProtoHack meetup over at the Tribe on Wednesday. If I have time, I'd really like to go check that out. Other than that, I think just some R&R. It's been a really busy last few weeks getting the presentation sorted and just all sorts of other things that we're doing at work. So,
makes sense.
How about yourself?
Obviously, I've got HackerNest coming up on Monday, which yep. I'm super excited about. But my pick of the week, I think this week, is Open Data BC has the Open Data Day, which is March 4th, mm-hmm. hackathon. And that's going from 9 a.m. all the way to 10:30 p.m. And it should be really fun. There should be some presence of some people from the city of Vancouver, Open Data BC, also from the Vancouver Dev Exchange, and even some mentors in the community who will be on hand to help out.
Very cool. Sounds good.
And that's Meetups Around Town.
So welcome back to our interview with our special guest, Chad Lehman from the Neil Squire Society.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what is the Neil Squire Society and what do you do?
Sure. Yeah. The Neil Squire Society is a nonprofit Canadian registered charity that really looks at how technology can help people with disabilities. Started with a man named Neil Squire who was in a car accident in the 80s and broke his neck right at the C1, C2 level. So right at sort of the base of his skull. So when he was in the rehab hospital with Terry Fox and Rick Hansen, where he broke his neck, he had a very difficult time speaking. Is because his tongue was partially paralyzed. So they invented a system for Neil where he could sip and puff on a tube and it got connected to a Morse code machine. So it made those sips and puffs dots and dashes and then connected that to a state-of-the-art Apple IIe computer. So Neil could sip and puff on a tube and it could type on a screen. So that sort of started the organization in this way. Like, how can technology help remove barriers that are faced by people with disabilities?
That seems pretty amazing. And this is back in the early 80s.
Early 80s, yeah.
So what are some of the ways that technology helping people with disability has changed and improved?
Yeah, and sometimes it's one of the moving goalpost things, right? Like, so for example, the Sip and Puff system worked great on sort of DOS-based computers. And then this graphical user interface Windows came along, and now you have to move a mouse cursor. So they built that into sort of a joystick, right? And that works well. There's a product out called the Joust. You can buy it for $1,500 American along the way, but it gives you that sort of mouse control along the way. But now, for the last 10 years, really, we've moved more to a mobile touchscreen sort of thing. And again, how does somebody access that if you can't use their hands along the way? So that's some of the work that I've been working on right now. So sometimes there's this new innovation, which can actually further marginalize people's disabilities. So new accessibility barriers made.
So what are some of the, I guess, types of disabilities that the Neil Squire Society aims to help people through technology?
Like, yeah, in BC, we run a program for the government of BC called Technology at Work. So if you're a person with a disability and you are about to start work or you have a job, and it doesn't need to be like a high-level spinal cord injury. It could be like, shoulder pain or back pain or carpal tunnel syndrome. Our occupational therapists, assistive technology experts can come into your business. Look at what sort of your key functions that you're doing and help make recommendations and help fund those recommendations as well along the way. Our specialty is definitely more around physical disability, but we have worked with people with a variety of different disabilities.
Very interesting. I've seen Microsoft has a technology video where they have a blind developer and he's telling his story about how, I think it's with their cognitive science APIs or cognitive APIs. And so he's got some glasses on that are seeing what he would be seeing and then telling him what they see. So I think there's a point where the glasses tell him, I think this is a young male skateboarder doing a kickflip.
Yeah, and there's an organization in the States that also received a Google.org grant like us that's doing some work as well. I think the Research National Institute for the Blind as well, that again, that sort of, using glasses, virtual reality kind of grab what's around and then actually translate someone that may have low or no vision. So there's a lot of innovation that comes with disability that, sometimes seems very niche, but actually impacts all of our lives. Like, for example, text messaging. That started as a service for people that were hard of hearing, the TTY phones. So that's been around since the 60s. It took us a while to catch up to, actually incorporate that disability innovation into the way that changes the way we all work.
Yeah, with the way that it's been adopted, I wouldn't have thought that it came from helping people with disabilities.
Yeah, a lot of things will be made, that's seen as a niche case for some disability and turns out to serve other people. And even in the built world, right? Like, wheelchair ramps, moms with strollers use them, UPS guys with their dolly of paper or whatever use them, right? So there's a lot of things that are sometimes, made for someone with a disability and turn out they have other implications. The phone, Alexander Bell, that started as a project for the deaf and hard of hearing, text messaging. So a lot of the things that we rely on today actually were started to solve a disability issue.
That's really cool. It's really cool to see different engineering approaches applied. You never know what seems like, oh, I'm just trying to solve this small problem, all of a sudden becomes this huge industry game changer. Super exciting.
Yeah, so it's a really exciting area to kind of be at the intersection of.
So you're also involved in some hardware.
Yeah, our background at the organization was around hardware. And that we're starting to move back into that a little bit. So last year we received a grant from Google.org to sort of solve that access problem for touchscreen devices. And for Google, it makes great sense too. They have this little operating platform. So it actually solves a business need that they have. So what we've built is this device called the Lip Sync. And I actually have one in my bag, which maybe doesn't really help audio listeners, but you guys don't
take a picture of it,
right?
We can take a photo and we can put it on our website. Yeah.
So the Lip Sync is, there's sort of two parts that are really exciting. The first part is it solves that access solution for mobile devices, on the Android platform. iOS doesn't have any sort of mouse support, but basically you can either plug this into your phone or Bluetooth sync it. A mouse cursor appears on your screen and then you can move that mouse cursor up, down, left, right with your mouth and sip and puff to sort of tap. So that's the one part we're excited. The second part is that we're releasing it open source. So it's not another disability accommodation or medical device that costs thousands of dollars. We've got the part list up on our website. It can be built for about $250 worth of parts. The shell's 3D printed. Some of the inside components are 3D printed. So the idea is that if we can, raise awareness of this device and then start connecting makers or skilled volunteers or student groups to people with disabilities, this can be made, really affordably at the local level.
Very cool. I think I actually saw a meetup at one point. Was it a makers meetup? I'm not sure if you were involved with that. Specifically targeting having people in tech, people with 3D printers, helping to make a difference for people with the disabilities.
Yeah, at the end of January, I ran an event called the Access Makeathon. And I get way too much credit if I say that. I had a lot of people to help me with that event. I partnered with SFU, a couple of UBC student groups, and also a couple of different disability organizations, the Rick Hansen Foundation and the Tetra Society. And it was basically like a hackathon, but the idea of it being more around the real worlds of person with disability. So every team was paired with a person with disability. That person had a physical world access challenge. And then over 48 hours, people basically built prototypes to solve different things. And they're on a wide range. Some was building lip syncs or accommodate them. There was one fellow who was quadriplegic, has low lung volume because he drowned when he broke his neck. He survived. He's a smart guy, but his wife is hard of hearing, so he's worried he's going to have a breathing issue in the middle of the night. So they hacked one of those iPhone can't get up button sort of systems where you can sip and puff, trigger that, set off a vibrant alarm clock underneath their head. So there's a lot of sort of innovation and projects made literally over the course of a weekend.
Well, even I guess the premise of that style of a hackathon is quite interesting in that you not only have people solving problems, you actually have the end user right there with you getting giving immediate feedback.
Yeah. And I've seen other sort of events that look to address disability issues and they don't have people with disabilities there, which is problematic, right? So they were, the people with disabilities, we call them, they're the team captains. They know their needs. They know their constraints. They know what their ideal solution would look like. And then the engineering and design people around them help make that over the 48 hours.
So if people want to get involved and help to do something related to that, or I think you said some of the hardware was maybe open source or we could use that.
Yeah, I would say if people wanted to get involved, there's sort of three easy ways that could be done. One, this new initiative we've branded Makers Making Change. So if you go to makersmakingchange.com, you can see that I should never make a WordPress website again along the way. But that's where we're starting to put some of our upcoming events and list our open source hardware projects. We're hoping to make that bit of a repository of open source hardware projects, and get some occupational therapists, the people that actually work in the industry to review it, but also connect makers to people with disabilities. So that would be one.
MakersMakingChange.org. Is that only for .com?
Yeah.
Thank you. MakersMakingChange.com. Is that only for makers?
No, that's for anyone that's interested in getting involved. And I'm running a number of events coming up. My next event's at the BC Tech Summit on the Monday before the summit. They're doing a Makeathon Monday where we're hopefully going to build 15, 20 lip syncs in a day at the event. That's free to register.
Where's that happening?
It's at the Vancouver Convention Center from 1 to 5. Come. It's like the free part of the BC Tech Summit. You can play with the 3D printers. Tinkerine will be there. We're going to make some lip syncs. It ends, the beer garden opens up, they're lighting the torch. It's going to be a good time. You should come down. That's Sounds Monday, March cool. 13th. And then my next event after that is with the Burmese School Board, where I'm taking all their technical students in grade 10 through 12, and we're hopefully going to make 30 or 40 lip syncs in the day. My big target is I'm trying to get to 150 lip syncs by June that will, quote-unquote, unlock my other half of my Google grant when I kind of hit that target in the Pacific Northwest.
How difficult is it to make a lip sync?
So when we had our first sort of guide, like our first prototypes, I had a grade 11 student, clearly a better student than I was when I was in high school. But she came in, I'm like, okay, well, here's the guide, here's the part pieces, you know, try to work through it, give us some feedback on the instruction manual. And then Tuesday she goes, well, now what do you want me to do? So I was like, okay, this is not so bad. So it's similar to kind of building like a Lego kit or an IKEA shelf sort of thing. It's smaller, but the hardest skill I would say is probably soldering. There's a bunch of soldering, kind of putting the resistors and capacitors onto the board, but it can be done in 2 to 4 hours, kind of based on your skill level, outside of the 3D print time for the shell and stuff like that.
And you said it costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $250?
Yeah, now for the first 150 lip syncs, we're giving them away for free along the way. So I'll supply the parts. I can even supply the tools. I just need the skilled hands to help me build these things.
And so that's all you need? Somebody to come by and help out?
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing these events, but I'm hoping to also done a lot of work with the Vancouver Hackspace. They've been really good to us. So we can kind of use their space and area to sort of build these things as well over the coming months.
And how many people does the Hackspace hold?
When we did the Access Makeathon, there was a good number of people in there. It got kind of cozy. But yeah, you can easily fit 30, 40 people in there.
Very cool. So if somebody, you mentioned three ways to get involved. So one was the
Makers Making Change. The second would be the BC Tech Summit. That's like my next event. And otherwise, call me up, drop me an email. It's, ChadL@makersmakingchange.com or ChadL@neilsquire.ca or Chad Lehman on Twitter or like whatever. Google me. You'll find me.
Very cool, Chad. I definitely plan to look you up and attend that, the event at the BC Tech Summit.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think it's a great opportunity. Vancouver has a huge technology community, and for people that want to kind of give back socially, they can use their technology skills to do that. They can really be a skilled philanthropist.
Yeah, and it also sounds fun. So what about for people like myself who have definitely seen other people solder but haven't really done any soldering myself?
Yeah, there's definitely some software challenges that we have addressed. The lip sync provides like a physical sort of accessibility, but there is still some usability pieces. So like if you had a tablet mounted to your wheelchair, it might be further away than you normally hold it. So things that would, we're looking at like customizing the mouse to make it larger or change the color, things like that. So there's certainly software challenges that I'm also facing if people are interested. That Makers Making Change website, like I think a few people could probably knock out a better website faster than this interview went along the way too. So there's certainly opportunities to help along the way. But we're a bit scrappy. You know, we're a nonprofit. There's a couple engineers working with me in doing this. But what we're trying to create is a space where it's not about Neil Squire Society, sort of a larger initiative. How can people with technology skills make social change for people with disabilities?
Great. Well, Chad Lehman, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast. And we'll see you at the BC Tech Summit.
All right. Stay amazing, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the Van Tech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.